Good boy, good boy. Tell her hello for me.
I sure will.
Hey, you want to say hello to Joe Vogler?
Oh, of course.
I was going to introduce him for in a minute, but I'll let you have a shot at him. Okay?
How you doing, Dick?
Good, Joe. I was thinking of you the other day. Got an article on the Constitution I was going to send up to you.
Good, I'd like to see it.
And you better believe it. As soon as I get back down to the States, I'll drop it in the mail.
You mean they're still printing things about the Constitution down there? I thought they'd completely discarded it.
No, no, this is a little bit of history, and it's a very, very expensive magazine that you can, not the average person's going to look at it.
You mean Reader's Digest?
No, no, it's called The World and I.
The World and I?
Yeah, that's a magazine.
Ouch.
Comes out once a month, and I didn't pay the $10. I got it for $2 in the second-hand shop.
Oh, boy. I'd like to see it.
I'll send it up to you, Joe.
Okay, box 40.
You bet. I'll be listening to you guys.
You bet.
Thanks for the call, Dave.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Well, before we get too involved with Joe Vogler here, we better do what we do. Huh? We better provide the opportunity for the listeners out there to win dinner for two from Laura's Gold Strike Cafe, located across from the Daily News Miner. And here's what you have to do today to win that dinner for two. And that's phone 452-7858 and tell me who those people are and what they have to say. And the first person that can get back with me after phoning that number, 452-7858, call us here at 479-TALK. That's 479-8255, and give us the answer. They will win dinner for two at Laura's Gold Strike Cafe. And by the way, folks, while we're talking about Laura's Gold Strike Cafe, which is located right across from the Daily News Miner, we want to thank Laura for providing the prizes of dinner for two for Alaska Gold Trails. And we're going to be with you in just a few minutes with our guest, Joe Vogler. And right now, we've got a call. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, that's Oxford.
That's Oxford. And what'd they say on that when you called them?
Oh, well, it was Good Friday, and they were closed today. And, well, they'll be closing at 1 o'clock today.
Well, that's real good. Thank you. And you know what they do over there at Oxford?
Certainly.
What do they do over there at
they
Oxford?
They sell gold and silver, and, of course, they buy it, too.
They do, huh? And can you get gold nuggets over there?
You bet.
You can get gold nuggets over there, and those are your precious metal people, aren't they?
That's absolutely right.
That's absolutely right. And do you know where they're located by any chance?
Yeah, they're located over on Wendell.
Wendell, 208 Wendell Street. And their phone number at Oxford Assaying and Refining is
452-7858.
Do you work for Oxford? No. Well, real good. I can see that you do a lot of business with Oxford Assaying and Refining, and I can also tell that you're pleased with the service.
Certainly.
Thanks for the... Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I ought to get your name down here so that you can collect your prize.
Now, that'd be terrific.
What is your name?
John Rathbun, R-A-T-H-B-U-N.
Again, John, on last name?
R-A-T-H-B-U-N, Rathbun.
Okay, John. I'll tell you what, just stop up here at the KFAR studio in the Washington Plaza and pick up your certificate that will provide you with dinner for two at Laura's Gold Strike Cafe. Thanks for the call, my friend.
Thank you.
Bye. Hello, Joe Vogler, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. It's a pleasure to have you on.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jim.
Tell us, Joe, let's just get this started right. Where were you, where did you come from, and in what year did you arrive on the planet?
Well, that was about April 24th, 1913. I don't know where I come from. I'm not sure where I'm going, but that's the statistics that show up on my birth certificate.
And where do they have your birth certificate?
It was in Barnes, Kansas. It's a little town in eastern Washington County. It's all in the northeast part of the state, due south of Beatrice, Nebraska, about 30-35 miles. Sort of a windblown plain, a little limestone, a few trees in the bottoms.
And tell us, Joe, is there a lot of mining around that part of Kansas? Is that where you got interested in mining?
No. There's Blue Rapids in the next county east mined an awful lot of gypsum. There's terrific, I guess, acres and acres and acres of underground caverns there where they took out gypsum in Blue Rapids and made wallboard. That's been an old industry in that country, but that isn't where I got my interest in gold mining. I think that probably came from my grandfather, because when I was about 9 years old, I moved to the country, and I'd started to in a little country school. Had one room and I think about 15 kids and a pot-bellied stove in the middle for heat. One teacher, and you heard everybody recite. So you got an education from the first grade through the eighth, no matter whether you wanted it or not. And a teacher asked us what we wanted out of life, and I told her I wanted 10 acres of ground paid for. I wanted a rock house that couldn't burn. I wanted an orchard and a garden, and then I wanted enough gold buried to pay taxes as long as I live. This was in 1921 or two, and the panic of 21 had pretty well cleaned out the farming area in Kansas. Every other farm was either owned by a bank or an insurance company, and times were tough. The poor farms were filled with people, the county poor farm, and so something had impressed upon my mind that it was necessary to pay taxes, and I figured that was the best hedge, and I probably can blame my grandfather for it, because he used to sell cattle, and the rumor was that he brought it home in gold coins and buried it somewhere. As far as we know, it's still there.
Tell us, Joe, did you go all the way through school in Barnes, Kansas?
Well, I got 1, 2, 3, 4 grades there in 2 years, and then I moved to the farm when...
What'd you do, get in a hurry?
I don't know. Maybe I was obnoxious or something, but I took the first and second grade in 1 year, and then I took the same in the third and fourth, see. So I got a couple of years out of step with my classmates, which didn't help any. We moved to the farm in, I think, January 1st of 1921, and a little country school there I picked up and went on there.
And in 1921, how far did you go in that little country school?
Well, let's see. I went through, 24. I went there three and a half years and graduated from there from the eighth grade. And I think in 24, and then I spent 4 years in Waterville, Kansas. That's a little town in Marshall County. I lived in the farm and went there for high school and got out of high school in May of 1929. 16 years old, and things weren't too good.
Mm-hmm. And
the farming area was still in the Depression, although the October crash hadn't hit yet, but it was not good, I'll tell you that much.
From that time, you went on to college, right?
Yeah, I took a scholarship examination in the spring of 29, Summerfield Scholarship at Salina, Kansas, and I was one of the 10 selected, and I got 4 years of college out of that,
mm-hmm.
$500 a year, and that put me through school, and I borrowed $600, I think, for my final year and graduated in 1934 with a law degree, and was admitted to the bar the following, next month or so, I think June of, mm-hmm. of 34.
So you didn't get your degree in mining, you got it in law.
Yeah, I'd planned on having to work my way through school, and I'd dreamed about going to the Rolla School of Mines. But that didn't work out. My father wanted to be a lawyer, and when I wound up with a scholarship, why, that's all I heard. You didn't argue much with Papa at that time.
From what I've heard, you don't argue much with Joe Volker at this time. Joe, tell me something about education. You came up here to Alaska, and I don't want to jump too far ahead here, but did you take some of these mining classes at the university?
I think I took that short mining course 3 times. I guess they figured I was dumb, and I was afraid they'd look at me. Larry Doheny taught one of them, and I don't know who the other teachers were, but I was fascinated by it, and I got in the brush every time I got a chance. But I took it 3 times. I think Earl Beislein got tired of seeing me around, too, if you'll ask him.
They're fun classes, aren't they?
It was real good. It was real pleasant. They started in the fall, in late September, and they ran on through into probably the 1st of December. And it was fascinating to get up there and do the tests and to listen and to talk to other people who were interested in mining. It was really a wonderful experience.
We've still got the program going on there, and some of the things that they offer there, and I might bring it out at this time, but a lot of times placer miners don't quite know how to go about evaluating their property, and one of the things that we have just developed here is the placer evaluation workshop, which is scheduled for the 14th, 15th, and 16th of April.
See.
And they're going to be, that particular program is going to be taught by the heavyweights. That's Ernie Wolf and Doug Culp and Don Cook. And the young chap that's just coming up, Kevin Adler, will also be presenting information on that. And that's through the Mining Extension Program. And if people like to know more about that placer evaluation workshop, They can call the Mining Extension office at 474-7702, or they can call me at 476-2569. Let me repeat that. 474-7702 or 456-2569. And a class that has also gained a lot of popularity over the past few years is our three-day gold prospecting class. It's quick, and people really enjoy it. And it will be held two weekends in a row. The first class will be on the weekend of May 13th, and the second class on the weekend of May 20th. And there's a maximum enrollment in these classes, so if you're interested in these three-day public service classes, open to the public, folks. No prerequisite. Just come in and have a good time. Give us a call. Once again, the number at the Mining Extension office is 474-7702, or you can reach me at my office at 456-2569. Anyway, those are a couple of things that are going on there at the Mining Extension program now, Joe. And same program that you took many years ago. And back to your education, and after you graduated from law school, and things were kind of tough around the
34?
Yeah.
Yeah, June of 34 was no picnic, I guarantee you that much.
Tell us what was going on at that time.
Well, of course, the WPA was in full swing, and the Federal Transient Service was taking care of the people that wandered across America. That was my first job. You couldn't get in a law office for love nor money. And I worked for them, I think, $65 a month in Kansas City and in Poplar Bluff and Springfield. When they found out I was from Kansas, why, that was it. They didn't want me, and so I got fired for that. Went back home and worked on the farm and did a lot of things. CIT, Dun and Bradstreet, picked up whatever work you weren't particular then. If there was a job, you took it and did the best you could with it. You know, it's sort of amusing now to watch people turn up their noses at jobs, because if the time ever comes again when it's as tough as it was then, why, we'll see just how well these people stand up to the tests. I'm a little bit pessimistic.
It was interesting, as a follow-up to that statement, Joe, I recently gave a paper at the Alaska Placer Mining Conference that suggested that small-scale mining was used during the Depression periods to extract enough gold just to put bread on the table, and a lot of people aren't familiar with that. But that occurred a number of times, probably during your lifetime, that people resorted to small scale mining.
I'll tell you that I didn't happen to see it in our part of the country, but since coming up here, I've become acquainted with a lot of people from the West Coast, and I guess the people just went to the hills there and made do with what they had. I heard of one man that took an old Model T rear end and took the ring gear off of the rear end and put welded spring leaves on it, made impellers, and used it as a pump. No, they got by. They made enough to live on. Even, see, gold was, they moved it up to $35 an ounce in 1933 from 19, and that gave the people a lot of encouragement. No, there was lots of people that, see, the drought came in the early 30s, or 30, 31, and we had 3 years absolutely no rain at all. We planted 180 acres of corn one summer and didn't raise one single cob. And the government bought up the cattle and shot them, dug big trenches and run them into it and shot them and covered them up, made another trench when they covered them up and did that. They were starving to death. Lots of cattle starved to death, and the heat killed them. It was 118, 19, 20 in the shade in Kansas. I've seen cracks in the ground that if you didn't step across them, you could drop a heel in them. Mm-hmm. It was not good times, and I can understand why people went west, and I heard about them in the northern part of California and Oregon. Talked to many people who said, yes, we survived there. A lot of people who moved to Alaska are the children of those people.
What year did you come to Alaska?
I came to Alaska in March. I arrived in Kodiak on March 28th in 42.
I want to talk more about that right after a couple of messages, Joe. And one of the messages that I want to provide for the folks out there is that we're here on Alaska Gold Trails with Joe Vogler. And if you'd like to talk to Joe, the number is 479-8255. And another little message that I'd like to send out is that Robbie at Tip Top Chevrolet may seem like an easygoing guy, but when he saw the all-new 1988 Chevrolet pickups, he really went overboard. He couldn't stop himself from stocking up on so many models. He's positive that if you can't find exactly what you want in a truck at Tip Top, it just doesn't exist. Why did a normally sane fellow like Robbie go out of control? Well, you'll just have to take a look at the all-new 1988 full-size pickups at Tip Top and see for yourself. Maybe it was the all-new, sturdier-than-ever boxed front frame or the new aerodynamic styling with smooth lines and rounded contours to reduce wind drag. Or perhaps it was the high-tech computer-engineered efficiency for all types of payloads. Or how about the large, easy-access doors, eight-layered finish, the all-welded box, or the big, comfortable cab? Who wouldn't flip over the new extended cab pickup that seats up to six people? You like four-wheel drive? Robbie's got the 4x4 Chevy with a shift on the fly power to all four wheels instantly. But as much as Robbie loves all his new Chevrolet pickups, he just can't use them all himself. So he's going to do the only sane thing. He's selling them to anyone who can come up with an offer that can stand up to the light of day. So come in today to Tip Top Chevrolet and see all the models Robbie has to show you. From the economical Cheyenne to the bold new Scottsdale and the top-of-the-line Silverado, plus more. Pick your pickup and chassis cab to suit your needs. You won't find a better selection anywhere than you'll find at Tip Top Chevrolet. You'll see for yourself what got Robbie so excited when you look at the wide variety of all-new 1988 Chevrolet pickups. Stop by Tip Top Chevrolet today for the best deals on the best new pickups around. That's Tip Top Chevrolet at 1916 Cushman, or give them a call at 452-8211. And don't forget Robbie's safety tip: buckle up with Tip Top Chevrolet. And another message from our friends over at Arctic Springs, Robert, Charlene, and James Johnson. As you know, own and operate a family business here in Fairbanks called Arctic Springs at 285 Alta Way. They started manufacturing leaf springs and U-bolts for all sizes and types of vehicles and heavy equipment several years ago. Because of their interest in developing a leaf spring manufacturing plant in Fairbanks, they became one of the first businesses to be awarded the use of the Made in Alaska logo for businesses using Alaskan products and labor. To give you an example of what they can do over there on Alta Way in their 6,000 square foot manufacturing plant, listen to this. They manufacture and recondition springs for snow machines, cars, trucks, heavy equipment, and get this, folks, even aircraft. Springs can be re-arched and U-bolts cold bent to your specifications, and they can raise and lower your vehicle. Arctic Springs handles both standard and custom-made coil springs. In addition, look at some of the other items they stock: a complete line of steel, brass, rubber, and Teflon bushings, torsion bar axles for auto trailers, snow machine trailers, and weasels. Finally, folks, they build trailers to your specifications, so bring in your blueprints or sketch. In addition, they have two huge 30-inch by 8-foot heat treatment ovens, which can accommodate just about any material that needs heat treating. That's Bob, Charlene, and James Johnson at Arctic Springs, 285 Alta Way. Give them a call over there at 451-8612 and tell them you heard about them on Alaska Gold Trails. Folks, we're here with Joe Vogler. And if you'd like to give us a call, ask Joe a question, the number here once again is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Joe Vogler, tell us about what happened when you came up to Kodiak. What did you do there?
Oh, I come up, I had a job in the office, and I didn't like that, so it wasn't too long before I went to work in the grease rack.
And what was the company, Joe?
Oh, it was Sims Drake Puget Sound Bridge and Dredging Company, I think. It was a consortium of companies that were building the naval facilities and Old Woman's Bay outside of Kodiak. And they were putting in submarine pens and airplane hangars and revetments and improving the runway. It was a defense project.
And how long did you work for them?
Oh, I worked for them, let's see, that March 28th, the CBs came in the following spring. We worked at Danger Bay out there, putting in an installation there for the Army engineers. I fished a stretch in June and July of 43. And when the traps were fishing so well, why we had to throw our fish overboard in the back bay, we decided that was a bad deal. Then I come across to Anchorage and hired out to Morrison Knudsen, came to Fairbanks in September, and we tore a drag line down at North Camp, put it up on pipe dollies, and hauled it to Northway, put it together, and they lengthened the runway down there. And mechanic, grease, did anything. You did anything and everything. We cut logs to lengthen the runway. The little planes were running off the end of the runways that were being delivered to the Soviet Union, see, through here. They come through here just like a bunch of mosquitoes every day.
And so had to be a jack of all trades.
Do whatever was called on. You didn't ask any questions. If it had to be done, why, you did it.
Mm-hmm.
And people didn't worry about crossing over Union lines or duties or anything else. It was, that's the nice part about Alaska. If you can't do this, well, you can do something else and get by up here.
Mm-hmm. And how many years did you work for the...
We worked there till Christmas time. Then I came into town and went to work for Metcalf Hamilton Kansas City Bridge at 6 Mile. And I believe I was there a year. And then went to work for the Army Engineers at Ladd Field out here. Worked there till 51 when I quit to go placer mining.
I see. What did you do out there at Ladd Field?
Oh, mechanic.
Same type of construction and maintenance.
Construction equipment. It was in the heavy duty shop. Drag lines and cats. I learned what I know about them there under Carl Johnson and Don Miller.
Well, that was
they almost gave up on me a couple of times, but I guess they were pretty patient.
That was the background you needed to go placer mining, wasn't it?
Well, you can do a little bit of your own work, and you learn what a machine is and what it takes to keep it going. And I worked in the grease rack, too. I've done a lot of things.
Well, one question I have is, something must have stimulated you to drop that activity for placer mining. Was there something, somebody or something that dangled some plum in front of you that caused you?
Oh, no. I'd always been interested in mining. I spent quite a bit of time down on Banner Creek with Fred Campbell down there and had the promise of a lease, and he went back on it. But I'd had my nose in the creeks here ever since I got here. We were only in Kodiak we got in there in March, and we went right out through the submarine nets that September with a bunch of us and went bear hunting over in the Katmai Bay area. Mm-hmm. Got around over there to see that little fishing boat called the Kuprianov. And so I went rambling in the hills every chance I got.
And all the time you were looking at the rocks?
Looking at the rocks. Yeah. They fascinated me, and I don't know where a 9-year-old boy gets the idea that gold's a valuable medium. Why, it's pretty difficult to trace it back except to my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get it that early, why, you'll never lose it.
Tell us, did you ever have an interesting experience with a bear over there?
Oh, yes.
Tell us about that, Joe.
The first time we went bear hunting, why, I didn't realize that they were as big as they are. You know, I wear about a number 11 boot pack, and we were on the beach there, I think, in either Terror or Villacota Bay, and there'd been a bear down there on the beach, and you could put the heel of my boot in the back end of the bear's hind foot and put the other foot right in front of it, and you just barely filled up the track lengthways, which means it's 22 or 3 inches, and it's just about as wide as not quite as wide as your boot pack is, but it's a big animal. And we tied into one fellow up there on the hill and knocked him down, and there were three of them. And we wandered around there in the brush, but a guy sitting up on the hill said that he wasn't sure whether we were stalking the bear or the bear was stalking us, but anyway, we got the job done, and I peeled his hide off and got it back to the States finally to be tanned. Oh, it was an interesting time.
Yeah.
I had a lot of encounters since then, too. So far, they've all been successful for me and unsuccessful for the bear, but never know.
Thank goodness for that. Look, Joe, I want to get into this placer mining activity that you went into in just a few minutes, but we got to give a few messages here. I'm going to talk first about our friends over at Gabe's Truck and Auto. That, of course, is Gabe and Kathy. And the message I want to send is, whether it's an auto, light truck, motorhome, or big rig, for the best service in town, it's Gabe's Truck and Auto Repair, and that's not just my opinion, folks. Last year, as a matter of fact, the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce gave Gabe's Truck and Auto their prestigious Raven About Fairbanks Award for providing the best vehicle service in Fairbanks. Gabe's has 2 large shops and 8 mechanics on hand to serve you. With that much attention, you will get fast, courteous service, and have your vehicle back in a hurry. In addition to engine and general vehicle maintenance, Gabe's can also repair automatic transmissions, realign front ends, and repair mount and balance tires. New and rebuilt engines come with a 12-month or 12,000-mile warranty. As you can see, Gabe's is a one-stop service center. And if you need an IM inspection, Gabe's has a no-pass, no-pay policy. That's right, folks. If you don't pass, you don't pay at Gabe's. And don't forget Gabe's towing service. He has three wreckers available 24 hours a day and can handle any size rig. Getting a tow is as easy as calling 456-6156. And you might want to write that number down. Just in case you have an emergency, the number again is 456-6156. You can turn your rag into a ride at Gabe's Truck and Auto, located off Van Horn Road near Metro Field. Or once again, you can give them a call at 456-6156 and tell them you heard about their service from Jim on Alaska Gold Trails right here on KFAR Radio.
Easter is a time for treats, and the North Country Inn and Fox is the place to go to treat your family to a special holiday buffet. This Sunday, starting at 11 a.m. and lasting till 5 p.m., you can enjoy a smorgasbord of ham, turkey, and all the trimmings, plus a sumptuous salad bar, all for only $7.50 per person. Kids 12 and under are only 50 cents per year of age. It's all you can eat, plus live entertainment in the afternoon by B.J. Cortez and Take 4. That's the North Country Inn and Fox, right off the Steese Expressway. A real Easter treat.
You're here with us on Alaska Gold Trails. I'm Jim Madonna, and our guest today is Joe Vogler. If you'd like to ask a question of Joe, the number here is 479-8255. That's 479-TALK. And before we get back to Joe, I want to tell you, give you a little message from B&L Pawn, and I want to welcome Bill and LaVon back home from their vacation. B&L Pawn Shop at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman is the most unpredictable variety store in Fairbanks. Now, folks, that's an understatement. It's more like having a giant garage sale in one room. One-stop shopping will get you everything. Just to give you an idea, let me list a few items. Jewelry, clocks, stereos, headphones, guns, scopes, winches, propane bottles, tools, hats, musical instruments, cameras, TVs, radios, typewriters, and our list goes on and on. In fact, you can get anything at B&L Pawn. B&L traditionally has offered tremendous savings, but in addition, if you tell Killer you heard it on KFAR, she'll even sweeten the deal. And if you tell her you heard it from Jim on Alaska Gold Trail, she'll even sweeten it more. If your money is a little tight, they'll be happy to help you out. Bring in anything you feel is of value or use, and the folks at B&L will loan you the money to get through to better days. Or if you sell items on consignment, they'll work with you on that too. So if you're looking for anything from snowshoes to diamond rings, see the folks at B&L Pawn, 605 Gaffney. Jim, Bruce, and Killer will be happy to deal. Killer never says no. They'll sell anything but the chandelier, and only then because it's attached. However, ask Killer, you just never know. That's B&L Pawn, corner of Gaffney and Cushman, 452-6491. Open 9 to 7 Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 on Saturday. And remember, tell Killer you heard it here on Alaska Gold Trails, and she'll sweeten the deal. Joe, tell us, where did you first go placer mining, and how did that all materialize?
Well, the first place we tried it was on Homestake Creek. That's a left-limit tributary of Charity Creek, which is one of the creeks that makes up Faith Creek. Faith, Hope, and Charity. See, it runs into, becomes the Chattanooga there. McManus comes down along the highway, and then Faith Creek runs into it, and from there on, it's the Chattanooga. We went there, I think, in the 51. We bought an old D8 with a broken transmission case from MK. They was using it on the airport job down here. We hauled a transmission case up from the States, and in a hole on the side of the hill out there at mile 7 on the Steese Highway, why, we took the frame arms off and everything out of the old case and stuffed it in the new case, built the cat from the ground up, and hauled it into Homestake Creek. That's about mile 71 or 2 on the Steese Highway. It's in there where McIntosh is operating on. We went back in there about 6 or 7 miles and tried it that summer. It wasn't good enough to make too much money at $35 an ounce, so we eventually pulled out of that. But it was quite an experience living in a white wall tent. Freddie Wilt and Tom, His name was Dick Townley. He drowned off the west coast there in the undertow one time, but Freddie Wilton, his wife, and my brothers and I went up there and worked that in the summer of 51. Very interesting place, and very well mineralized.
Well, tell us a little bit just how you, the mechanism of your plant, how was it
structured? We just took a, we built a sluice box out of wood. I remember putting that together right there on the ground, two by fours and I think 1x10s and planks. We had a couple of old truck beds and made sort of a slick plate. And to doze onto this sort of slick plate, they were using that method up in the Mastodon Creek, and I got to take a look at it and then doze away with the cat.
And the water just ran from the stream right through?
No. There was an old ditch up on the hill. See, that had been hydraulic, the lower end of it. In the early day, Frank Miller at Miller House had mined there, see, and a number of other people. And we took water out of the ditch and brought it into the sluice box. I'll never forget, they talk about grayling not being amenable to mining. We shut the water off, and I heard something flopping on the slick plate. There was still a pile of rocks there, and here was about a 14-inch grayling, and swam up the creek right through the discharge and was on his way on up to that ditch if he could just get there. So I helped him on his way. It didn't bother him any.
You got a call here, Joe.
You bet.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Got a question for Joe?
Yes, I do. The story he's just now relating, Joe, what year was that?
This was in 51.
Okay, so was this was after the Davidson ditch still being used for much, or was this after?
No, the Davidson ditch, they were still maintaining it. There were ditch walkers there. Those cabins were maintained. And if I remember right, I think they were still doing a little mining out here at Fox. I'm not going to be certain on that because my interest was up the roadways, but the ditch was maintained at that time. Now, shortly thereafter, while there was a group bought the ditch and put in a power generation system there where the ditch comes down off the left limit of the, I don't know if that's the Chattanooga. It's above this side. It's upstream from Chattanooga on the Steese Highway,
right,
about 4 miles. But they were... That was a little bit later, I think, that they put in that power generation. I know the ditch washed out up there one spring, and it made quite a mess there at about mile 56, 57. And they cribbed it up and filled it in, I know, at that time.
Okay, you just used a term that a lot of people probably aren't familiar with. You said ditch walkers. Can you explain that a little more?
Oh, yes. The FE maintained the ditch. They had a cabin at 66 Mile, and there was another one down about 30... where's that that big building up there? It's about 40... About 44 Mile. Is it Camp Creek? Is that right where that two-story building? That was an FE building there. They had people there, and the ditch required constant maintenance, you know. And they were on that all the time. They called them ditch walkers, and they walked back and forth. I remember one was attacked.
They were looking for problems at the time then, huh?
Oh, yeah. You've got to maintain those. You keep the brush out of them. And I don't know whether the muskrats give them. I heard a time or two that the muskrats digging holes in them gave them some trouble. Now, I don't know. I can't be sure of that, but I've heard things to that effect.
Well, thank you for the information, Joe.
You bet.
Thank you for the call, sir. Joe, we'll get back with it in just a minute. First, let's talk about a couple of our sponsors here. I got some exciting news from Alaskan Prospectors at 504 College Road. Alaskan Prospectors has a complete new stock of crystals and minerals from around the world, and they are beautiful, folks. Why don't you stop in there at 504 College Road and take a look at these beautiful specimens. In addition to that, you might want to take a look at some of the recreational gold mining equipment, such as pans, sluices, and suction dredges, which are on stock now. And, of course, the item that is getting a lot of hoopla lately is the Garrett metal detectors, which have been responsible for the discovery of several large nuggets here in the state of Alaska this past summer, and we hope that many more will be discovered next summer. They also have gold concentrators, and for the rock hound and mineral buffet, they have rock saws and polishers. You want to give them a call over there, it's 452-7398. Once again, that's Alaskan Prospectors at 504 College Road. Their phone number is 452-7398. In addition to that, folks, we'd like to talk a little bit about K&K Recycling. And as you may know, K&K Recycling at 8.5 Mile on the old Richardson Highway is the leader in recycling in the Pacific Northwest. Bernie Carl of K&K is a former miner and believes that our natural resources must be preserved. In addition to that, Bernie has appeared in many schools throughout the area to explain the value to school children on the benefits of conservation and recycling. Bernie has also made a number of trips overseas to investigate other areas and concerning recycling problems. He's made presentations down in Juneau, and he's been working very hard to establish this recycling business not only in Fairbanks but develop it in Alaska statewide. So come by and visit K&K Recycling at 8.5 Mile on the old Richardson Highway and learn more about recycling. Call for a daily quote. That's K&K Recycling at 8.5 Mile old Richardson Highway. Their number over there is 488-1409, and they're open from 8 to 5:30, Monday through Saturday. That's their winter hours. Once again, their phone number is 488-1409.
Lots of new movies opening today, rather auspiciously, on April Fool's Day, but just in time for the big holiday weekend. Among the biggies, Bright Lights, Big City, the controversial film based on Jay McInerney's Hot bestseller. I had some problems with the movie, but love Michael J. Fox, who really breaks through in the leading role. The number one film last weekend was Neil Simon's Biloxi Blues. I spoke with Neil about this film, which has as many laughs as poignant moments, and we decided that Simon's work, even The Odd Couple, mixed comedy and drama, and that was way before the fashionable dramedies came to TV.
I didn't know it was going to be this hilarious play. I thought it was a comedy that had some dark overtones or undertones, because I was writing about, basically, if I said the premise of the play I'm writing about is two men who are divorced, who don't quite know how to handle their new life. One is about to commit suicide, the other, he's so despondent, and the other is trying to pull him out of this despondency. The way the play worked out, it turned out to be a very good comedy, but again, for me, it was always rooted in the serious subtext.
I'm Joanna Lanfield.
I'm Patrick O'Neill, and I've discovered a small miracle to relieve aches and pains. Therapeutic Mineral Ice. It's the first penetrating deep cold gel that thousands of chiropractors and pain specialists now use and recommend. Mineral Ice stops pain fast, like the minor pains of arthritis, backache, and sports injuries. No grease, no stain, just pure relief from the cool blue gel. But let me caution you, there are Mineral Ice imitators. They try to look like Mineral Ice. They try to fool you. But the Mineral Ice formula has never been duplicated. For the minor pains of arthritis, backache, and sports injuries, you deserve the real thing. Now let me recommend you use only the real thing, Mineral Ice, because I know you can't fool around with pain. Mineral Ice, the pain fighter. It really, really works.
Therapeutic Mineral Ice, the pain fighter. At your neighborhood pharmacy, Value Right, Walgreens, Revco, Eckert's, and Rite Aid. Use only as directed.
Joe, hope, faith, and charity are all relatively well-known placer mining creeks, and some of us in the industry have recognized that some relatively large nuggets have come out of that area. And you mined in that vicinity for, what, how many seasons?
We worked that one season. I held the ground, went back and prospected it, and it too was pretty skinny at $35 an ounce. I know we picked up one beautiful nugget right off the slick plate, see there on Homestake Creek. Yes, they were nuggets come off of that. Frank Miller had a little sack of them at Miller House that he and Graziella had taken off of Homestake Creek, and I don't know whatever happened to them, but he showed them to me a number of times. There's some coarse gold in there. There's a couple of big porphyry humps in there that there's also a little cobalt and some other minerals in there that it'll be a big producer someday, but I'm not encouraged at the present time.
Well, where did you travel to after your experience
there?
Well,
the next trip I made, Earl Hurst and I took a look at Morlock Creek. Dick McIntyre flew an outfit down there for us in the wintertime, and we went down. I know it was 40 below when we got there, got a tent set up. And then that spring, I bought a 8x10 pump from Freddie Johnson, and I took a D2 down, put it on the river barge, and at high water, why, they just run it right off on the bank. And we worked there that summer, and I had the misfortune of, I was going down to the next creek doing a little hard rock prospecting, and I run a stick in my groin on a D2 and had quite a time, very lucky not to get just skewered. So I didn't go back down there. In the meantime, I'd gotten interested in Ketchum Creek. And before I got to Ketchum, why, we made a trip prospecting into the headwaters of the Robertson River, looking for some hard rock down there. And then the next trip was Ketchum. I bought that in 59 from Mrs. Zimmerman, worked there, and then wound up buying Woodchopper Creek from Dr. Patty, leasing it, and buying it in the early 70s. Bought Ketchum Creek in 59. At $35 an ounce, it was pretty tough to make a living, and what I really did was to accumulate ground that I figured would eventually pay off, and sooner or later, why, the price went up, as you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now you've got the government saying you can't do it. We've got 3 injunctions against us on Woodchopper.
You're still holding the Ketchum Creek?
Oh, yes, we're holding Ketchum Creek.
Is there any mining going on?
Oh, yes, Fred Wilkerson's on the lower end of that, did reasonably well this last year. And,
I wanted to ask you about Fred. You think he'd be a good guest on the show here?
Well, Fred Wilkerson was born in this country, and he knows more about mining. He could tell you things that his daddy wouldn't even hardly let him go to Circle Hot Springs, just a few miles away. It was all work. He could tell you. Fred would be a good guest, you bet.
And he probably knows a lot about...
He knows an awful lot about...
The history of the Circle area, too.
Oh, yeah, he could tell you things that I've never even heard, probably.
Okay. Well, I think we'll try to see if we can't get Freddie on the show here. It might take some arm twisting.
Well, that's up to you. You know, you do a pretty good job of it.
Oh, thanks, Joe. Everybody will see me come and run to the other side of the street. Joe, you went to Ketchum, it was lean pickings, then you finally got Woodchopper. There's a gold ridge on Woodchopper.
Yeah, there's a gold ridge on Woodchopper. Well, you know, believing in gold, 3 things, real estate, gold, and Caterpillar equipment, that is wealth. This money that we pass around, that's a medium of exchange. It's a form of confetti that everybody accepts, and that's about all. And so I felt that eventually that gold would assume its true station in our economy, and so I figured that was about the best investment a man could make, and I proceeded to do so at every opportunity. A lot of it was easy enough to buy it, but it was awful tough to pay for it at that time, but I haven't regretted a bit of it.
I want to talk a little bit about the Woodchopper Gold Ridge business in just a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
First, Joe, let's talk about our friends over at Hector's Welding. Hector's Welding, located at 13 Mile Richardson Highway, has been serving Alaska for 40 years. Their 14,400 square foot shop is capable of handling the most demanding work quickly and efficiently. Listen to this list of services. They can replace dozer blade liners. They also rebuild loader buckets and repair shanks. They do heavy equipment repairs and modifications. And of course, everyone knows mining equipment fabrication is their specialty, including sluice boxes, conveyors, feeders, grizzlies, and screening plants. They also fabricate specialized riffles and punch plate. They have portable welding units for fast on-site repairs. Hector's fully equipped fabrication shop is ready to serve you. Bring out your ideas and blueprints. It's a well-known fact that anywhere in the interior where the big jobs are done, men in the field depend on Hector's for proven, rapid, reliable work. Rush jobs are no problem. Remember, Hector's Welding has been getting the job done and done right for 40 years, and now an all-new service, Flocculants. Hector's is the gel log distributor. There's a free test kit available for you placer miners. All you have to do is stop out at Hector's and pick it up. Remember, it's free. Wherever Alaska miners are working, Hector's is the first name in gold recovery equipment, located at 13 Mile Richardson Highway. Phone 488-6432. Joe, tell us a little bit about the Woodchopper Creek property.
Well, the Woodchopper Creek property has been known since before the turn of the century. especially Coal Creek was known as a place where you could rock out a grub stake there. Wood Chopper, of course, was where the first major discovery was made on the creek, and the Mineral Creek Mining District was set up in November of 1902. And it was mined sporadically. There was drift mining on Mineral Creek. In fact, there was a lady there that was running a windlass for a while. There was 8 crews there. And then from there, they expanded into the main creek. There's a story about there were a group of English and Germans working there below Green's Gulch. And the story goes that the propaganda that came out in 1912, you know, that preceded the conflict in Europe, World War I, was taken to heart by these people, and they broke up their combine, burned their cabins, burned their boiler house, burned their wood. And so help me, there's a winch, a two-drum winch, setting over a shaft, and it's the Babbitts melted out of the bearings. You can see results of the fire, and the cabins are gone. And so I've wondered if that wasn't really what happened. But then Patty came in the 30s, and he came to Coal Creek first, and then he came over and drilled Wood Chopper. I think Bruce Thomas, who's still living in the city, he was one of the gentlemen who had the misfortune of being beaten up this winter. Yeah, he was over there, and Stampy and Smitty, and I think Woody Johansson, they all worked there for Patty. They were his boys on Wood Chopper. You could talk to some of them. They could really go into the history. I just know that it happened, but I wasn't there at that time.
How many times have you run for governor, Joe?
Three.
Three times? You're going to do it again?
No. Huh? That I'm 75 here in a few days, and there's some young blood coming up, and we have the party established now, and I think it's time somebody else gets in the fray.
Thanks, Joe Vogler, for joining me on Alaska Gold Trails today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
I also want to thank the listening audience for taking part in the show. Next week's guest is Irene Lynn from Big Delta. And I want to let you all know, folks, that it's been fun. This is Jim Madonna on Alaska Gold Trails. Until next week, by the way, we will be extending our show to a 2-hour show next week. We'll be giving it a try for a short period of time, see how it works out. If you like it, let us know. Until next week, folks, happy prospecting. This is KFAR Radio, 660 on your radio dial. The time is 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for news.